are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a sin, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And it's Wednesday, April 19th, says the calendar. Thanks for tuning in to Out There Today. I have a special guest in the studio who's Arma Twisted to come in here. This is Alex Jarrett. Well, actually, we got to the studio like 10 minutes ago, and I was like, Alex, I forgot my entire packet, everything I wrote for today's show. But fortunately, we live, I'd say, a five-minute ride away, because in 10 minutes, Alex made it home, picked up the packet, and is back in the studio with us. Perfect timing, Alex. Thanks for your speedy trip.
You're welcome.
That was a bike ride. Yes? Okay. I wanted to wait till you got back to play this little PSA, because I'm going to talk about, well, yeah, because I'm going to quote it.
It makes me feel free.
I do it to save money.
I feel in charge when I'm doing it.
It's a healthy way of life.
Why do you bicycle instead of driving a car?
It's a good way to fit more exercise into my day.
Bicycling is a fun, healthy, economical, and fuel-efficient way to travel. Enjoy the ride. Take your bike. Brought to you by the Franklin Regional Council of Governments and Pioneer Valley Planning Commission, with funding provided by the Federal Highway Administration and Massachusetts Executive Office of Transportation. Come visit enjoythericebybike.com.
Oh, that is so funny, because they didn't actually say what I thought they did. I had misheard the quote in my head again and again, the line. I thought they said, it makes me feel alive. But they said, it makes me feel free. And I think they said, I feel alive when I do it. Anyway, I keep thinking, it makes me feel alive. I like to ride my bike because it makes me feel alive. Alex, are you alive over there?
I am.
Thanks for coming down here. Let me scoot the mic a little closer to you so you don't have to lean. I'm going to talk about biking some. Also want to mention, in case I've run out of time going on and on about transportation things, I also want to mention the May Day strike coming up on May Day, May 1st. I want to mention a teach-in that's happening at Smith College on Saturday, this Saturday, April 22nd, from 11:30 a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. Teach-in and action with Cosecha Movement. It's preparation for the May 1st strikes. People are meeting at Weinstein, I think, at Smith College. Hang on, I get some more information very quickly. Learn more about the fight for permanent protection, dignity, and respect for all undocumented immigrants. From 11:30 to 1:30, there is a teach-in with leaders from Cosecha, I believe. And, oh, online it says, download application form. Organizing for Undocumented Students' Rights, I think that's the organization that's coordinating this. There's also going to be an action downtown as a second hard part of that event, according to the flyer. You can go online and find more, because I can't see it right now in a timely way. Okay, we might talk more about that later. So it was burning in my mind to talk about transportation things today. I think what sort of triggered it was that recently, I think a couple of weeks ago, I was at a meeting one evening, and at the end of the meeting, someone said to me, do you have to bike home? Because I can give you a ride in my car. And to me, to my ears, it sounded like a very strange thing to say. It was like if I said to someone, oh, do you have to drive home? Because I have a tandem. We can bike home together. I love to bike. All right, Alex, you like to bike?
Yes. Sorry, I'm just doing some research here.
Oh.
I was, really excited to come on the radio show with you, Ruthie, because, I love thinking about bikes and cars and trains and planes and transportation issues. I also felt like, oh, I want to be able to say something that's not just my opinion. I would like to actually look at some facts and try to get some of those out as well.
Yeah, because you know I'm going to rant and rant about my opinion, and I need some counterbalance here.
That was why I was excited, actually. It was because I would, you know, I'm always encouraging you to do. I always wanted there to be a section on this show called Ruthie's Rant, and maybe we'll finally get a whole show that will be Ruthie's Rant, maybe with some other opinions or facts occasionally in there, maybe even a caller.
All my opinions are based on facts. The facts as I see them. and callers are welcome to call in 585-1033. And since there's two of us here in the studio, hopefully we can answer the phone and keep the show going at the same time. 585-1033. I'm just going to start. So I wrote all this stuff this morning. I just started to write. I woke up at 5 in the morning like, I got to write. I know what else. It was because I was in a car yet last night. I went to East Hampton and back, and that was like so traumatic for me. I had to get up and write something about it. Do you know how much I love to ride a bicycle? It makes me feel alive. That's the biggest thing. Using your body to power yourself through space is like an essence of being human. Cause things that don't move themselves in some way are dead. Okay. I recognize there's some ableisms and stuff, and like the less you move, the more dead you are. You know, there's a lot of questionable reasoning going on in my little rant, but everybody alive moves something. And I would just argue that people should move themselves and their bodies to the maximum of their abilities. Many people rely on electric wheelchairs because they can't physically move themselves too much. But for people who can, like, why would they choose to rely on a giant electric wheelchair or gas wheelchair, which is kind of how I see cars in some ways. Able-bodied people have an amazing opportunity to use their own power to move themselves all over town, but we deny ourselves. Oh, I just looked up the term gaslighting yesterday. I've heard it used a few times lately, but I was unfamiliar with the term. It basically means to be psychologically manipulated or lied to, so you wonder if you're going crazy or imagining things, and it's insidiously controlling and demeaning. I feel this way about the auto industry and car culture in general. Like, it's such a big lie that people are swallowing whole. This idea of freedom, responsibility, safety, image, comfort, ease, convenience. Where's page two? Alex, feel free to interrupt me if you have anything you want to add. Stories. If any stories come to mind, because I'm sure people want to hear like stories. Oh, yeah, I already told a little anecdote about people saying, oh, you don't have to bike home, do you? But I like to bike home. I think I probably should start, like, riding a tandem around. Do you think if I rode a tandem, people would take me up, I could give them a ride home? Then they'd have to leave their car at the meeting, and then I'd have to give them a tandem ride back to their car, which would be good, right?
Yeah, I think we need to normalize the tandem. If people rode tandems all over the place, then... you know, there would be all sorts of options for getting rides.
By the way, here's an aside. There's going to be lots of asides today. But the Valley Bike Share, that plan has been pushed back to 2018. It was supposed to come 2017. The bike share program, kind of like they have in New York, Boston, well, in bigger cities where you can. Let me know if you don't know what a bike share program is. 585-1033. So biking, it makes me feel alive. Why am I going to choose to sit in a box a lot bigger than me and bigger than it needs to be when it kidnaps me from my surroundings and my personal power and freedom? I was talking about gaslighting, the idea that we're brainwashed about cars and freedom. Alex, when I was just... When we were talking about coming here today, and you're like, do you think it's going to be too much of the same stuff? I thought you meant like more drivel about transportation issues. And I'm like, you know, does the auto industry ever play an advertisement and think, oh, you know what? We've already advertised cars today. We advertised cars yesterday. Let's just stop. Let's move on to advertising bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see what we're up against. So gaslighting, like the idea that we're brainwashed about cars and freedom. People, I'm here to tell you there's no connection between cars and freedom. Cars are traps. You get in, you shut the door, and you can't go anywhere unless it turns on and 1,000 different parts work right. Plus, there's that pesky license you have to have and registration, inspection. Oh, yeah, and, like, is there a gas station nearby? You can't get very far away from those, or your car means nothing, like a tether. It's like the country's a giant minefield of gas tanks buried under the ground, and the surface of the earth is a million crawling creatures, every single one of which has to line up and stop at one of those and dip down its straw and suck. It is amazing how well-behaved the crawling creatures usually are. They've been trained to stay in line at the gas station. Don't ask any questions. This is the way. This is the path to freedom. and then that reminded me of these. You've probably seen these stickers, Alex, of they kind of look like a gas tank, and the nozzle is actually like pointing at someone's head, kind of like a suicide. So here I am going off on this rant, all because someone asked me if I wanted a ride home. Like, geez, Ruthie, the first person was, like, being polite and generous and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, different realities. We live in different realities. Another thing that made me think about different realities is when I was biking up King Street yesterday with a fully loaded trailer, and I usually, like, so the rail trail crosses King Street. I should make sure I explain this for listeners who are of both realities or of each reality. So when you go up King Street from, like, Fan Street, then the rail trail crosses as you get close to Stop and Shop. And there's a stoplight there, but it's just a button-activated pedestrian crossing light. So, and I usually turn left onto the rail trail. So King Street's a four-lane road, so, like, I'm usually going up, taking a lane, and then I move over into the left lane because I got to turn left on the rail trail, and there's cars coming in both directions often. But I got 300 pounds of trash, so I don't know. I feel pretty protected. But I sometimes wonder if motorists are thinking, why, what, where is this cyclist going in the middle of this four-lane road? Because my eyes, like, the bike path is such an important part of the transportation network, or the rail trail, the multi-use path. And, like, when I see a map of the city, I see the paths, like, they stick out to me, like an interstate might stick out to a motorist on a map of a state. And, like, I know for you, Alex, since you walk through conservation areas, you know how to get from our house on High Street in Florence to River Valley Market through the woods, or how to get out to Sylvester Road walking through the woods. Like, you see, like, when you think of a map of Northampton, I'm sure you see walking paths too, and not just paved roads. What do you
for sure.
What else do you see?
Yeah, I mean, one of my dreams is that there be walking paths all through Northampton, kind of as alternatives to needing to walk on sidewalks or on streets. And so, you know, I've developed paths, some ways to go, say, from Florence to River Valley Market that don't sort of minimize being on streets. And I'd like to do one that goes from Florence down through Smith Volkland, but I'm not sure that's permitted, to the high school, and then you could walk along the river. So you could actually find a way to walk all the way into town from Florence with just basically being in wild spaces or green spaces most of the time.
And mostly having soft earth under your feet instead of paved rail trail, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like thinking about that and thinking about the impact of being in the paved environment all the time, on our feet, the impact of having to be so close to breathing, the exhaust from automobiles. I guess if I had something I was to rant about, I guess I would say sometimes I do feel like ranting and yelling at people about the immediate effect that driving has on the people walking around, and that's that I have to breathe the emissions that you are putting out. I have to breathe those right away. Compared to thinking about carbon dioxide emissions and global climate change, but just the immediate effect that has on the people right around, and as well as the noise and the danger.
You saying that reminds me, I feel like for many years, for me, the whole, if people want to talk about global warming, I mean, now I think it's more, the crisis is more obvious, but for the last few decades, I'm living in the South for part of that, in a more conservative place, I've just kind of been like, I don't need to talk about global warming or whether or not you believe it or not. Can we just talk about whether or not we can breathe and asthma rates and these very immediate effects, like you say. Okay, hey, I got another paragraph of rant. What time is it? 4:18. Oh, this is so exciting. I forgot to say, you're listening to Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Alex Jarrett is also in here. Thank you, Alex. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And here on Valley Free Radio, and also streams online at valleyfreeradio.org. And archived shows of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/out there. Okay. Different reality. I was talking about different realities. We have these different realities on so many levels, cyclist, motorist, white people of color, people with legal immigration status, people without, on and on. Anyway, but for me, okay, cars, that's what I know, or bikes, that's what I know. So for me, riding in a car, it's killing a part of myself and denying myself the chance to feel fully alive. I feel like a blob in a bucket seat. Did I forget to mention that I consider myself a carmudgeon? but when I do ride in cars, like I did yesterday, I numb myself and say, you know what? It's just a compromise. It's a compromise I'm going to make right now. I'll numb myself to this inhumanity and just take it. And usually my reasons are because I want to be with other people on a car ride or at an event that I wouldn't otherwise go to. That's how they get you. Use a car or else you're going to be isolated. And you'll be alone and your friends will leave you behind. Because they're going to be driving everywhere, and you'd better drive to catch up, or you're going to be sad and lonely. People violate all kinds of principles because of fear of being alone. They consume mad resources to avoid feeling alone, like buying lots of stuff. I'm really lucky I've been able to set up a life where I'm surrounded by human beings out in the flesh, walking and biking, stopping and talking. I feel like on an average non-winter day, I might have 30 or 40 conversations with random people throughout the day. And that's without ever setting foot in a car. But it wasn't always that way. I grew up in a rural area in eastern Kentucky where driving was the only way people got around, or at least 99% of the time. But I hated it. I always got carsick going around the curves and up and down the mountains. Being in cars and feeling like I want to throw up have always been connected in my mind. Yeah, I got my driver's license when I was 16, and I used it for 3 years, but I never liked the idea of making other people breathe my pollution. The first Gulf War started when I was 17, and though I was living in a part of the country that was all about support our troops, fighting against the evil dictator, it really didn't take a rocket scientist to know that we wanted Middle Eastern oil and we wanted it cheap. And we wanted it cheap at the tanks, at the gas tanks. But I remember the bumper stickers that said how many, well, okay. Yeah, but if you include the cost of wars for oil and the price per gallon, it gets a lot more expensive. Then you see the bumper stickers that say how many lives per gallon. Then I have that echoing in my head, it makes me feel free. It makes me feel free. So I mentioned, so last night I rode in a car and it was pretty traumatic, as you could tell, which is why I'm decompressing all this today. It was only to East Hampton and back. And coming back in the dark down Florence Road, it was like the darkness was the body of the earth and the path lit up by the car headlights was cutting a groove in the body. Earlier in the day, I'd been talking with my friend Anthony, who builds bike wheels, about dried cracking hands, like when the tips of your thumbs crack open, like in the winter. And he said, and the worst is when I'm building a wheel and the end of the spoke goes right into the crack. Bah! It made me flinch. I know that pain. And last night in bed, the memory of being in the speeding car cutting through the darkness was with me, and the road seemed like that kind of crack in the earth's surface. I felt like an intruder searing through an open wound, causing untold pain. The gashes fester at the edges where oil and rubber dust and salt run off and kill the things on the edges. But it makes me feel alive. Biking makes me feel alive. I was thinking today about all the different ways, like in my mind, and I speak as a very able-bodied person, but in my mind, so many ways that we can act to make the environment better or less worse. They're also fun in my mind. Like biking is so much fun, or like doing things with human power instead of machines. They're just so much fun. It's just so much fun to use your body. That's how I feel. So like, why is it normalized in able-bodied people to depend on a 2,000 or more pound hunk of burning metal and plastic to move our puny little bodies around? Tell me, Alex, people. Like, energy is so easily available here in excessive quantities and cheap that we have no concept of how to value it. Like, try for a day to move you and your car 5 miles without fossil fuels. I'm gonna set aside the whole like electric cars because most of them, I think, depend on fossil fuels. It's on some fossil fuel burning, what do you call it, plant. What do you got? Am I right, Alex?
I think that's it depends on where the electricity comes from. Well, there's several factors. I mean, there's
set me straight.
There's the infrastructure costs of building the car and where that energy comes from. So that's the, you know, the embodied energy of the vehicle itself. And so how you can calculate how much energy and carbon emissions it took to make a particular vehicle. And it's a surprising percentage of the entire life cycle. Maybe I can do some research and try to find out what percentage.
I think it's somewhere like a third to 40% is kind of what I remember. Does that sound ballpark right?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So there's that embodied energy. Then of course there's the energy to recharge the car, and you know where that comes from. You know, using if you had solar panels on your roof and that could generate enough power to recharge your car, then you could have that energy be coming from solar.
But don't forget the embodied energy of those solar panels.
The embodied energy of those solar panels. And how long, you know, that takes, which is something, but it's not, it's definitely, you're still getting more energy out of solar panels than it took to make them by far. And the the third thing that I think about is the infrastructure of the roads that you're on and all the energy that it takes to, you know, mine the materials for the asphalt and lay that down and do, you know, all the vehicles that are needed to move to create and maintain roads. So part of thinking about how much energy and how many fossil fuels are going into a particular mode of transport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the electric cars, there's the precious metals for the batteries too, which is something that I've thought about with electric bikes, but I think electric bikes are quite a bit lighter.
Yeah, if you look, I think there would be no comparison of infrastructure costs of electric bikes versus electric cars in terms of just the you know, maybe you're moving 1/10 of, yeah, including yourself,
yeah,
of a car.
Yeah, I mean, at some point with no reasoning, you might as well just jump off a cliff, and that's the best thing you can do for the world. Okay, so all right, so I was talking about energy and how readily available it is and cheap. So yeah, try for a day to move you and your car 5 miles without fossil fuels. Okay, fine. Just try and move it 1 mile. Like, let's say you live in town and you need to go to the grocery store. Are you going to take your car with you? Will it fit in your pocket? Maybe you should take a bag. That's a little bigger. No, it won't fit in there either? Well, maybe you want to put it on a wagon and tow it along behind. Oh, it's too heavy. What about caster wheels? Like a piano mover might use. Still not strong enough. Oh, right. It's got 4 wheels already. You can just push the car. Oh, come on. Are you going to push the car 1 mile to get to the grocery store? Oh, where's my next page? All right. Say something, Alex. Dead air. Mm-hmm. Losing my train.
No, you know, we've been talking so much, probably people need a moment of silence to just take in the...
That's true. What about all the energy I'm wasting with my breath? Oh, man. Woman. Child. Here we go. The good stuff continues. All right. So are you going to push the car 1 mile to get to the grocery store? No, okay. That's a ridiculous waste of energy. You'd be exhausted by the time you even got to the end of the block. Cars are heavy. Jesus. Why move this 2,000-pound beast around? What a waste of energy. All you needed was groceries. You didn't need a whole moving adventure. Aha. So now is the point where you realize, if only I had some gasoline. I'd put that in the tank and vroom, I can go anywhere. The intensity of energy in fossil fuels is mind-blowing. You just felt how much energy it takes to actually physically, humanly move a car. And now to think a few drops or cups of gasoline could do that? Wow. So we have this source of condensed energy, and we use it to drive cars around in circles or deliver a few pounds of people or goods here or there. Whoever thought this was logical in any way? All right, we have a caller. They probably just want me to answer the phone and not... okay, so I'm going to take that call. Alex, can you talk about the comparing different modes of transportation?
Sure. So I was trying to do some research on flying versus driving versus taking the train versus taking the bus. And first of all, the bus, Greyhound bus, wins out by a tremendous magnitude in terms of passenger miles per gallon of gasoline equivalent. The bus gets somewhere around 150 miles per gallon per passenger. And then a car, is down around, let's see, passenger. Okay, so the average looks like 50 miles per gallon. Assuming the average occupancy of the car is 2 or 2.2, apparently, is which seems awfully high to me. But Because you see so many people going solo in the car. And then the train also weighs in about the same, Amtrak, around 50 passenger miles per passenger miles per gallon. And planes are just a little bit less at a little over 40 passenger miles per gallon. And so the key, you know, there's so the thing about a car is that if you can pack in your car, you're going to double your plane or your train. If you can pack people into the car, you're going to do so much better than a plane or a train, although it is actually really hard to get would be really hard to get to a Greyhound bus level of efficiency. Mm-hmm. So those are interesting statistics. But there's also one, in addition to, there's the carbon emissions, then of course there's the question of the infrastructure, and there's sort of the kind of infrastructure that you want to support. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're going with cars or buses, then you're supporting the infrastructure of the highway system and the road systems, and if you're going on trains, you're supporting the train station systems. And there's I like the idea of train systems better because you have you're moving so many people or so many goods along a set path, and then you're having these stops, and so that can encourage a pattern of growth, a pattern of how people live around that station, in a way that a car would encourage is the sort of things spreading out further.
Yeah, like,
because there isn't the necessary, you don't necessarily have to go to a station. Buses, of course, also have stations, but they contribute to the general highway system. So,
yeah. So, like, the train station model encourages dense clusters of housing of people around these certain stops, which whenever people are more dense, it's usually like providing resources, water, sewer, electricity, all those things are more efficient.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at the amount of area devoted to parking, that if we didn't have to have so much parking, then people can live much more densely, and it therefore makes walking and biking that much easier. So it's interesting to say, look at an aerial photograph of Northampton and look at how much of the area in downtown is devoted to parking, and compare that to a photograph in the 1940s or earlier, and there were many more buildings. So it's interesting to see how that it compounds, how the car culture has compounded the effect of not being able to decrease the walkability and the density.
Yeah. That reminds me of a conversation that I had with Wayne Fiden a year or two ago. Wayne Fiden's the city planner, head of the planning department for Northampton. But he said that the overall population of Northampton, it hasn't changed in a bunch of in many years. But yet you see all these new developments popping up. And it's just like the people are just living, it's more spread out. So we had a caller. Ed Russell also wanted to mention, when we were talking about energy that the automobile industry takes, don't forget the energy that it takes to build oil wells. That whole oil shipping, transport, drilling, right now, like the tar sands and all those things. Anyway, okay, so I wanted to mention that I live in a house that's 1,300 square feet, and we heat most of the space in the winter, when really all we need to keep warm is our bodies. Maybe we should just wear space suits and not have all that wasted energy. Oh, yeah, right, the pipes and lots of other things shouldn't freeze either, so we need to keep those warm too. And there are more efficient ways to do so many things in our culture. So I'm not pretending to be immune to wasting. What else? Oh, yeah. So I was just thinking about, you know, we're constantly making decisions about where to put our energy, you know, what we see as the most important things that need to change in the world, and we have limited time and energy, and how do we choose our battles? And anyway, for some reason, I was just thinking about how, so we make these compromises. Like last night, I went on this car ride, and because I wanted to go somewhere and I felt like it was worth it. But when we do that, the things that are hurt in our path are just kind of like collateral damage. And you can justify, I don't know, just like the war machine. If they say that we weren't, you know, they didn't intend to kill all these civilians, they say it was just like collateral damage. And sometimes I think with cars, it's like, well, we weren't intending to pollute and all these things and cause all this sprawl and all this. This is kind of collateral damage because we need to get from here to there. And the options in our culture are people feel very limited. Alex, you're very compassionate for people who are trying to juggle lots of things in life, kids, work. Work in East Hampton, work in Amherst, kids go to school in Hadley.
Yeah, it's tough.
Do you have any advice or ways to listen well to people?
It seems like we need to change the whole system so that people aren't as busy. Uh-huh. Because that seems to be driving if things were more compact, that would obviously be mm-hmm. easier. But if you have to work so much, mm-hmm. then you have very little time to get between all the places that you need to get to. And, so that it's, and cars are great for getting places pretty quickly, and transporting people, especially small people who can't transport themselves very quickly, and so it's pretty complicated. But there, you know, I gave a talk about a year ago, which was on the show at one point, about sharing. And sort of the economics of sharing things and how much that, in terms of like sharing a home, is a huge one in terms of how much money can be saved. Mm-hmm. Sharing a car is another, where, you know, if you're not someone who has to commute with a car every day, then you can share one, and that, cuts down a lot. But the difficulty in sharing is that our culture is not, given the tools to share well. And so it takes a lot of work to figure out how to share things. But that work pays off is what was my argument, that, you know, put in you will run into difficulties in crafting agreements and figuring out how to share things. But it gets easier, and you learn about, you know, how the importance of confronting people on something sooner rather than later, or skills in listening and letting people kind of vent their feelings before trying to bring up a more before trying to ask people to change, ask people how they're feeling about something first, and then ask them to change about it, is a lot more can be more effective.
Yeah. We're gonna stop for a break here in a minute. The the busyness thing, I certainly struggle with that too. That's like where, that's why I hardly ever walk anywhere, because I'm too busy and it takes too long and I have to bike. It's the same mentality. It's the same cultural mentality that people in cars have, just on a different level. All right, I'll play Juan Luis Guerra, El Niagara en Bicicleta. That's actually not about bikes. It's about the whole healthcare industry, I guess, or getting good medical care.
Me di una sirimba un domingo en la mañana cuando menos lo pensaba. Caí redondo como una guanábana sobre la alcantarilla. ¿Será la presión o me ha subido la bilirrubina? Y me entró una calentura y me fui poniendo blanco como bola en naftalina. Me llevaron a un hospital de gente, supuestamente. En la emergencia recepcionista escuchaba la lotería. Alguien se apiada de mí, grité perdiendo el sentido. Y una enfermera se acercó a mi oreja y me dijo, tranquilo Bobby, tranquilo. Acarició con sus manos de Bengue y me dijo, ¿qué le pasa, atleta? Y le conté con lujo de detalles lo que me había sucedido. Hay que chequearte la presión, pero la sala está ocupada. Y mi querido, en este hospital no hay luz para un electrocardiograma. Abrí los ojos como luna llena y me agarré la cabeza. Porque es muy duro pasar el Niágara en bicicleta. No me digan que no me... Me escribió muy dulcemente, lo siento atleta. Me acarició con sus manos de Bengue y siguió su destino. Y oí claramente cuando dijo otro paciente, tranquilo Bobby. Bajé los ojos a media asta y me agarré la cabeza. Porque es muy duro pasar el Niágara en bicicleta.
No me digas que los médicos se fueron.
We had a caller during that break, David Rasoff, who wanted to say, he said, well, I'm not very good with a car, but when it comes to heating in the winter, home heating is a huge, huge energy user, that he keeps his heat at 50 degrees and he wears lots of long underwear and sweatshirts, piles on the layers. And also a lot of your heat goes out your head. So make sure you put something on your head whether it's a hat or a hoodie or something. And now, oh, Alex, you have something to say.
Oh, I wanted to give an update. We had talked about how much energy it takes to manufacture a car versus how much energy it takes to drive it or, you know, operate it, the gasoline. It's definitely pretty significant in terms. It depends, of course, on which kind of car. It certainly can be as much energy to drive a car or to manufacture a car as it took to drive it over, a shorter lifetime. And that speaks to the importance of keeping a car on the road, that although it takes some energy to make repairs, it's a lot less than the energy to manufacture a new car. Mm-hmm. So, if you are driving a car, it's carbon-wise, it's great to keep it running as long as you can.
Yeah, I remember when I was about 17 and I was all about the air pollution and maximum miles per gallon and all that. And my oldest brother, who's 14 years older, he had this old beater car that he would always like be fixing up on weekends. And I was like, that thing's a gas guzzler. Don't you think you should get a new car? And he was like, oh, no. Takes a lot of energy to make a car. And I was like, I was trying to do the math in my head. Not that I knew of any figures for real, but it's true. My older brother knew better than me. All right, time for the bike lab.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring. Alex Jarrett is my guest here in the studio today. We're also housemates and coworkers. And like-minded people, if you haven't noticed. So I was thinking about, well, Alex was talking about sharing and how it's an important part of our cultural shift that needs to happen is learning how to share better. And this idea in some circles it's been verbalized a lot, the idea of there's enough to go around in the world if we just distribute it more evenly, more equally, more equitably. And I'm reminded of this book entitled Energy and Equity by Ivan Illich. And so there may not be enough energy for everyone in the world to drive a car. But according to Ivan Illich's calculations, there's enough energy in the world for everyone to ride a bike. Something else I've been thinking about recently is, so a couple weeks ago on the front page of the Gazette, I only saw the above the fold part because I was emptying downtown trash barrels, and I just always try and read the above the fold through the glass as I'm going down the sidewalk. And they had a picture of the two brothers from Congo who just moved to Northampton through the refugee program. And the opening line of this article, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not going to get this exactly right, but it said something like, when they got off the plane, choosing to take the escalator or choosing to go up the steps instead of the escalator was one of the first of many choices in this new country that the Congolese brothers took and or made. And that warmed my heart, because I was just like, we need people from other places to save us in this country from ourselves and from our consumers' ways. But it also made me think, like, when I think about immigration and making more American consumers, well, that can't be good for the planet either. There's got to be a good way to do this.
Well, yeah, making things in other countries livable places instead of, you know, the policies that our country and others have that make these places not livable, so the people need to move.
Yeah, it's also twisted. We export the pain, and people come to the place that's the source of a source of a lot of the pain and policies. Anyway, I think I want to play another song. Oh, you know what? I want to mention Dwayne's show. Dwayne Rainey has a 70s rock and roll show every Friday from 2 to 4 called My Generation, Rocking Through the 70s. He's a good DJ, knows lots of good music. Fridays from 2 to 4. Anything else, Alex? Because I'm going to play another
play a song, and maybe we'll think of other things to say. And we're all still accepting callers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So during the song is a great time to call if you have something you want to relay.
Yeah. 585-1033. Should I play I Can Ride a Bike with No Handlebars, or should I play Los Caminos de la Vida?
Your choice.
Help me. This is the Flowbots. Maybe I'll have the time to play both.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. Look at me, look at me, hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper even when the paths are all crooked-y. I can show you how to do-si-do, I can show you how to scratch a record. I can take apart the remote control, but I can almost put it back together. I can tie a knot in a cherry stem, I can tell you about Leif Erikson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends are platypus, me and my friend made a comic book. And guess how long it took, I can do anything that I want, cause look. I can keep rhythm with no metronome. No metronome, no metronome. And I can see your face on the telephone, on the telephone, on the telephone. Look at me, look at me, just called to say that it's good to be alive. In such a small world, I'm all curled up with a book to read. I can make money, open up a thrift store, I can make a living off a magazine. I can design an engine, 64 miles to a gallon of gasoline. I can make new antibiotics, I can make computers survive aquatic conditions. I know how to run the business, and I can make you want to buy a product. Movers, shakers, and producers, me and my friends understand the future. I see the strings that control the system, I can do anything with no resistance. Cause I can lead a nation with a microphone. With a microphone, with a microphone. And I can split the atom of a molecule, of a molecule, of a molecule. Is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations and let them all die in acceptance.
vacation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite. By satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope. Through a telescope. Through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust. 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 In a holocaust.
I'm on my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars.
That was the Flowbots. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock here on Valley Free Radio. Something else I wanted to talk about just a little bit before we run out of time is, so a friend of mine, Kevin Young, wrote a really great article. He's a history professor at UMass, I believe, wrote a really great article about immigration. And I've only left myself a couple of minutes, but a key quote about here. So the paper that I'm quoting from is entitled, Poor Huddled Masses Not Welcome, A Very Brief History of Immigration in the United States. So he talks about exclusion and refugees not welcome, like, for example, how the family of Anne Frank was repeatedly denied U.S. visas when many of the Nazis' victims were prevented from obtaining asylum in the United States. And talks about disposable labor and exclusion with tact. I'm going to read this. So, nowadays, overt racism is generally deemed unacceptable in mainstream political discourse, though Trump has aimed to rekindle it. Few opponents use the language of Andrew Jackson or Ulysses Webb when they denounce immigration. The fact that overt white supremacy is no longer considered legitimate is one achievement of the progressive social movements of the 20th century, including the U.S. Civil Rights Movement and numerous anti-colonial struggles. But there's one exclusionary assumption that's still accepted by virtually all politicians in Congress, by presidents from Obama to Trump and all the others, the idea that non-citizens do not, and should not, have the same rights as U.S. citizens. The distinction between citizen and non-citizen remains perhaps the most fundamental basis for exclusion in our current system. The country in which we happen to be born is one of the most significant determinants of our life chances. Like, it's called the birthright lottery by Professor Ayelet Shachar. It determines what kind of job we have, the water we drink, our education, other services available to us. There's also inequality within countries along lines of class, race, gender, and other categories. But our place of birth is still widely viewed as a legitimate basis for discrimination, rarely questioned even among immigrant rights advocates. All right, that's just good to chew on for now. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! I'm sure Amy Goodman will give you lots more to chew on. Thanks, Alex, for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
DJ mixes and rhythms.
And that was Out There.
Every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m.
The views and opinions expressed on WXOJLP are solely those of the original hosts and guests of their respective programs.